Hello and welcome to Funny Business. I'm Locke.
I'm Rob. On today's episode, we have Hannah Ferguson, CEO of Cheek Media. And I feel like...
And co-founder.
Co-founder, yeah. I'm not selling her short. Don't
worry. Wears many hats.
Wears many hats. I feel like this is a cool episode. We've covered a bunch of different people in the past who are doing like new media, shaking things up in the world of traditional media and how things like... Gone are the days of newspapers. Would you like to read a newspaper still? How would you feel about that?
Oh, look, instead of scrolling on my phone when I'm sitting on the toilet, maybe the old newspaper would be all right. But I love this episode with Hannah. She's so articulate, presents really well. I love her ideas.
It's a hard thing putting your opinions out in the world, you know. I think what we covered...
For a couple of fence sitters, you know.
Yeah, a couple of fence sitters. In this episode, one of the things we did cover is like, what are the ramifications of putting yourself out there? What are the pressures and stresses attached to doing that? And then... Like always feeling being plugged in to go and have that sense of responsibility.
Nurturing
to punch stuff
the community,
out there.
Baby.
All that sort of good stuff. Enjoy. See you next time. Hannah, thank you so much for jumping on the Funny Business podcast. For those at home listening, tell us, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Hannah Ferguson. I'm the founder and CEO of Cheek Media Co., which is basically like a progressive news commentary platform that's primarily run through Instagram, but we have a podcast, Big Small Talk, and I have a book that came out at the end of last year, which is called Bite Back. So kind of doing a lot of things, but I would say that Cheek mainly is kind of like feminist left-wing media that's trying to challenge Rupert Murdoch's media machine in Australia.
Oh, I've been seeing you pop off all over Instagram, and I heard you on a couple of pods talking about growing your audience and getting into it. But for our listeners, how did it all begin? Like, I know that you're doing it solo, yeah? Like, it's just you pumping this out. Like, how did it start?
It started, I was 22 when Cheek was founded, and I founded it with two other women who were my good friends. And basically, we were volunteering in like a feminist organization at the time. And it was when Scott Morrison was in government. And I mean, that's enough said on its own, right? Like, we were so passionate about politics for young women and try to have those conversations where we thought in the media, young people's opinions weren't being represented in any like tangible or meaningful way. Like, I think I love Batuta Advocate. You know, I do love Pedestrian and Junkie and Punky and all those sort of youth publications that are aiming at humor for young people. But that was the thing for me. They were aiming at humor only. And my thought was always, why do we never just get to say something serious and be taken seriously for it? Like, it pissed me off. And I was very much like, I need to create something that 15-year-old me and 16-year-old me would have benefited from, because I wanted to give more of a shit about politics and sort of just like social issues and understanding the news. But I didn't have a forum for that where I felt welcome or understood the language. And so Cheek was created by the three of us at the time because we thought we want to create a space where the left can kind of come together and have conversations that aren't infighting, but actually accept levels of progress that could be someone learning what consent is for the first time or someone who wants to abolish the police. Because there's a spectrum, and it's how do you cater to that audience of people that often find themselves disagreeing, but want to have a healthy conversation. Is that possible on social media? So that's kind of how Cheek was created and why. And it's just grown from there. After Scott Morrison lost the election, I thought, oh my God, it's over for me. My content is over. He was serving me up a hot platter every day of shit to shit on him for. And suddenly I was like, now I've got to pivot and go broader and talk about sex and relationships and cultural and, you know, social issues. And it gave me like a new pivot point to like open up and expand my audience. So it's kind of just like rolling with the punches and expanding media conversations over and over again for as far as you can go, basically.
Growing up, did you think that you would get into the world of media? Did you like want to go down a journalism pathway? Or was it something like, did you study it? Like, how did you end up doing this?
Yeah, no, I didn't. I actually started studying journalism and law at the same time when I was in my first year of uni, and I dropped the journalism because I thought it was bullshit and I would never work in it. So I literally started and thought, this sucks. I hated it. I thought it was dumbing down my writing. I thought it was making me oversimplify my own thoughts. And I was getting terrible marks because I was sick of writing in the way that the journalism degree wanted me to. So I was like, I can't do this. I'll just do straight law. Now, I don't like law culture because I'm not sure if you've ever met a lawyer before, but they're awful most of the time. And so I was very much like, sorry to any lawyers listening, but I was studying my law degree thinking, I don't want to work in a traditional corporate firm. I don't want to work up this hierarchy. And I felt like it was very stuffy and the culture was very suffocating to me. Like, I was just like, I felt like I had the language and the tools to challenge the legal system, but I didn't want to work within it. I felt like I was like critically thinking, and I felt like the law degree had gave me all the skills to do what I'm doing now, but I never expected it to come about in the way it did. So when I was studying, I thought I was going to get through this and I'm going to do something completely different. I worked in at uni, I like volunteered at like a legal service for prisoners just because I wanted to engage with someone on the other side of the system and see what that was experience was like. And I really just spent my time volunteering at like different organizations, doing a heap of different stuff just to kind of see what did I like doing and what was I passionate about. And then basically Cheek was just a hobby that was an Instagram page for 2 years where I was just shitting on Scott Morrison and thinking, oh, this is going pretty well. And then federal election week, we got like 10,000 followers in 5 or 6 days. And I thought this could be something. And so at the start of last year, I basically went full-time solo with Cheek. And it's been 18 months now almost of basically just running it by myself and running like a media company, despite having no journalism qualifications, but just being passionate about sharing opinions, not with a journalistic sort of lens, but through the lens of someone who wants to kind of provide people with the information and the education to articulate progressive ideas in their own way.
I feel like new media and the rise of like just di like people are building audiences, building communities, doing things differently. I know we had founders of Daily Oz early doors and
Oh, yeah.
got to see their story about like
Sam and Zara,
Sam and
yeah.
Zara, like of like building an audience and that moment for them of sort of becoming that like trusted news outlet for younger
Younger people.
people wanting to absorb and take in news differently. And I feel like as like I'm what are we how old are we? We're fucking 32, yeah.
Yeah,
And it's weird,
I'd
like
say that's
I find it
young,
really
younger.
tricky, truly tricky, like having conversations even growing up with like our parents and generations like that, where it's like that news bias that people don't always understand exists or where they actually consume and what they take in. And for us, like trying to like filter through whatever lands, whoever funds these different places and what it is, it's like that freedom of expression, that freedom to go out there and say, I now have the ability with what happens in the internet to just say whatever the fuck I want, you know, within reason. Like obviously law background, you don't want to, or literally make up anything, you
Yeah.
know, just make lies up and say it, spread it out there. No, but it's like that ability to get out there and like say what you want and have people be able to have that open platform and for people to respond and interact and communicate. Has that been a cool thing for you?
Absolutely. But also, I think it's so important to say that, like, I really love what the Daily Oz is doing, which is like that down the middle news. But it's really funny because a lot of people come to me and say, like, oh, but like, that's a competitor of yours. I'm like, absolutely not. Like, the Daily Oz is where I want people to go for their news in the first instance because they need that objective, factual lens. And then what I want them to come to me for is the sort of person that provides an opinion on what they're seeing, not for them to take as gospel because I have my own bias, but it's about being transparent about that bias. I'm saying, no, I'm not asking you to agree with me. Quite the opposite. What I want to provide you with is a take that you can sit with and go, huh, how do I feel about that? I'm going to go and read two more news articles about that to get a bit more informed. And these are the resources how, like, I'll deliver the education as to where you should go to be reading your news as well. And then for them to sit with it and go, how do I feel and what's my position in relation to that statement? Not to just take it as gospel and start repeating it over and over again. So it's like, I love what I do because I'm not asking for someone to just blindly believe me. I'm asking to be challenged, but I'm asking for that challenge to occur in a respectful way. And I think that's the problem with social media, right? It's never respectful, it's never healthy. And so it's trying to like bring that back and say, we can all have these opinions, but the way it devolves into these like personal attacks, even instead of remaining about the issue and kind of like coming to it with an understanding that we all have our personal context and prejudice that we come to every conversation with. Like, how do we get honest about that? Because people will say, like, you're objective media. No, I'm not. I'm not Andrew Bolt. I disagree with him, but I'm offering a different side of the spectrum. And it's who you find yourself in relation to and where you kind of pivot to from there in your own personal life as a consumer of news. So it's like, I love what I do, but I also do not want people to be under any illusion that I'm trying to be objective. I'm absolutely not. I'm saying, here's my position, what's yours in relation to that, and let's talk about it.
I like this because it's like what you talk about all the time. Like people watch the news, or like I think about from a sports analogy, it's like
Watching footy shows
watch
with
the footy
like
shows. Then at
the
the end of the night, you got footy classified. You got people come on who have different opinions of stuff, and you're like,
helps you form your ideas and what you think about things. You just need trusted people. And it's not like you take every word and everything. Might not be everything, but it's just it gets you thinking. Exactly. It's just about pivoting and saying, like, why do I disagree with them? And you shouldn't be sitting there watching the footy show being like, he's a dickhead. You should be saying, I disagree for X, Y, and Z, and I think this instead. Not many people do that. You probably just yell, he's a dickhead. But I understand, and that's what we're aiming for. We might not always get there, but we're aiming for that.
I think like there's progression in friction, when you're like when you're saying the challenging, it's like I always felt like I changed my mind a lot, but I feel like if someone presented me a good idea that was better, I was like, oh well, I agree with that now. I can be wrong in the past, and I feel like that challenging is really healthy.
And I think like the whole first chapter of my book is about like how we have political conversations with family, because there's so much conflict avoidance. And I get it, you don't want next week to be like banned from Easter lunch because you challenged grandpa's racist remark. But what I'm saying to people is like, it's not about getting up and having a big brawl at Christmas lunch or Easter lunch. It's about saying to people, how do you challenge the conversation in one small way, and how do you respond rather than react? Because also, when we avoid conflict, all that exists is silence, and all that exists is the people around you thinking that's like the accepted status quo about any given statement or view. So when you're silent about it and you go, I just can't be bothered with that, I get it, but there's five other people around you who might just accept that as kind of the reality as well, that viewpoint that's problematic or that you don't agree with. And what I say to people is like, you don't have to blow up your family. You don't have to have these conflicts where like you're actually in harm's way. But what I would say is, if you have an opportunity to have a conversation, I think you're underestimating your impact every time you're silent. I think you're underestimating the fact that you need to not go into a conversation thinking I have to win. Because if your only view is that you need to win, you've already lost. It has to be, all I want is to be challenged to think about something in a different way, and to challenge the other person to think about something in a different way. Like, that's ultimately what my belief is in any conversation.
What do you think about digital platforms and like the, I guess like the social commentary and the aspect of people going at each other in the comments? Like my perspective on this is, I feel like we live in this really heightened sense of if people don't hear something that doesn't agree with them, they definitely go straight down to that personal attacks thing because it's more like my viewpoint against your viewpoint, not trying to find some sort of common ground. And it's a weird, the part of me I find really weird is like, it feels like we're moving more and more away from like cohesion and people like liking each other and more towards like division and hatred based on people pushing down not activism pathways, but just like super highlighted sense of whatever opinion is on whatever fucking issue. It's like, it's a weird way to live, I think.
Absolutely. And I mean, think about any given political debate. The way that it's been positioned to us by the media is that as if there's two sides, and it's like a win and a loss. There's no in between, there's no conversation. And it's like any issue, whether it be immigration, whether it be reproductive rights, whether it be gun laws, there's always this like, it's either yes or no, either a win or a loss. You're either red or you're blue in America. Like, the way that we see political conversations, the way that we politicize everything as having like these two poles, and you're actually just being polarized through inflammatory language and like a win-lose debate, means that you're never capable of healthy conversation because there's no ability to meet in the middle. But the media actually doesn't believe this, they commodify it. I think that's what people don't understand, is like, your clicks, your anger, your comments drive their pockets. They fill them. So it's like they're not getting anything from coming to the table and saying, let's all hug it out and talk about where we can find agreement and morality here. They are benefiting from their Daily Mail tabloid shit, which is making fun of a woman for wearing a bikini at the beach, or sort of obscuring like a domestic violence epidemic in this country. Like, the way that they shift blame and make things inflammatory from the headline alone pushes the narrative that you can only win or lose by being on one of two sides. And that's kind of where the problem lies, because then what we find is people cannot articulate or express like common ground or the fundamental sort of sentiment or morality or ethics behind their viewpoint. And when you can't articulate it, what do you go for? Personal attacks, or like this ability to like mock people's spelling. It's like, if your only thing and your only response, I get it, it's an easy low-hanging fruit thing, but you're not really proving that you believe your own argument if you can only go for how someone looks, who someone is, or the way that they spelled their sentence. You know, like, you're kind of
We're in
missing the
trouble for
broader
spelling,
point.
I reckon. Me and you.
I'm very good at English and writing and stuff. You're
Yeah,
putrid.
I'm putrid.
You're
I'm in
putrid. Don't
trouble.
drag me down with
Yeah.
Come on.
But it's funny, I reckon like one of these ones, like I think it's from like leaders and examples, right? And I think politics, right? We got to go to the New South Wales Parliament House at the end of last year and got.
Can't believe they let me in.
Yeah, Locke was.
Paper machine. I'm like, I'm sweet.
They looked at us. They looked at us, the security guards, like the airport thing, and they were looking. Are you guys in the right spot? Like, you meant to be here. Locke in his bucket hat and that. It's like, yeah, no, we're here. But again, I feel like you watch it. You watch Question Time. You see things going on. You're like, I also find it weird about how people are allowed to interact in those environments. Like, politicians are allowed to turn their back, they're allowed to walk out, which allows different
I
things.
couldn't
Like,
believe that.
from a just a hey, two different sides. I know it's about trying to get outcomes, but there's a lot of time where you see this stuff happen. You're like, are you actually acting in the best interest of what we're trying to get some sort of progress? You're trying to get some action that comes out of this, or are you willing to drag your feet? You're willing to walk out of the room or not listen to someone, or like the actual bullying that happens in these places? It's like, that's a weird thing for leaders, like behavioral traits for leaders to exhibit, especially when we're as a public trying to figure out how we interact and engage on these issues too. Is that something that you see as well?
Totally. And I'm of the belief, I think I saw this written somewhere years ago and it's always stuck with me. It's like police and politicians are two people where the more they want the job, the less they should have the job. You know, like if you're really desperate to be a politician or a cop, you're like, oh, there's some red flags there. I don't know why. You're so desperate for it, right? Because I think that like the desperation for that power exhibits why you shouldn't possess it, right? And I think that's the thing is that a lot of politicians, I truly believe, just are not there at all for the right reasons. They're there to showboat. They're there for the power that comes with the ability to like vote on reform and be like the elected representative for their area, but it's because they want the status and they want the image of that leader of the nation thing. And we see it in Question Time because we see them behave like animals. Like school groups aren't allowed to go into certain parliaments in the country because of the way that the leaders exist and behave in those public forums, right? And the thing I constantly think is they are performing and they are engaging in theatrics again for the benefit of the Murdoch media because they don't actually care about the position they're taking or the people that exist at the heart of this story. They care on the headline and how they are reflected to the voters. And ultimately, they will do and say anything to retain that vote, retain that power, and move forward. And I don't actually think any politician is exempt from that because I think inherently part of the structure is that they have to engage in that behavior to get re-elected because that's what the media wants and that's actually what the public engages with. You know, they need to have a social media following now. That's kind of another element that's sort of taken part of like who a politician is and how they succeed. And so it's actually like a really all of us conversation because when we engage with these headlines that are inflammatory, or when we engage with the politician that gets the most views because they lost their mind. Like, I love Bob Catter for the joke, but if you really look at that for more than 2 seconds, it's concerning that he's in parliament, you know? Like, there's the memification of people, but then, like, the real question is, should that person actually be in that place? Like, it's very concerning who sits in that room and makes the decisions that will affect the future of our country.
You actually talked about it on a pod where you were saying, like, your amazing idea that you had growing up about life. We're all just actors in a thing. And then you realize that's a movie, The Truman Show.
Oh yeah, I was just literally saying
Yes.
that. Yeah, I thought I had this grouse idea. I was like, maybe I'm just like an actor, or maybe it's main character energy. I'm like, I'm feeling myself a little bit too much, you know? But then realized like Jim Carrey made a movie about it. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it
I
is
actually
weird,
am.
like the front, you know, the aspect you're saying there, like the front of these people actually like playing and pandering or like really trying to activate people, whether they believe truly in that stuff. And I feel like that's
It's not authentic.
in the stuff that's like that sits in both ends. I see it from both sides of politics, like especially during like COVID lockdowns of people who are like really activated that anti-vaccine and people who just want to just like fucking go crazy about it. And then also on the other side of things, like you see like who was the people doing the protest in Melbourne last week? It's like the climate activist stuff and that.
Yes.
And they're shutting
Extinction
down. And that's the other end of the
Rebellion,
spectrum.
yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the other end of the spectrum. Like all these people are just like, everyone cares so much about something at the other point. But it's like these people, it's like cult leaders that are driving them to go and act out and do this stuff on both sides of the things. And I just find it like, I'm not someone who very hard, I feel
But
like it'd be very
you
hard to get me to actively go and do that stuff. But I was saying this before we hit record, it's hard enough to get me to like go to buy tickets to a gig. You know what I mean? Like, let alone get me out protesting and like, I'm gonna fucking burn you down because of this. It's weird.
I get it, but I also think it's so important to say to people, like, I get that protest is the very visual, very aggressive level of like political activism, right? But the other thing I would say is, like, you vote every time you like talk to your dad about politics. You vote when you move your super to some a fund that's more ethical. You vote when you make a tax deductible donation. You vote when you go to the supermarket and choose the brand that's more sustainable that costs a dollar more. Like, there are so many ways that you're active that you don't even realize that are incidental. Like, I think it's so funny because you feel like if you're not in the t-shirt with the sign on the street, you're not like the activist. But it's like every time you post on social media, every time you put your money somewhere, you are making an active choice that is your vote or your advocacy in some small way. And I think that people forget that. I think people forget, like, every time they choose to like opt into a conversation where some one of your mates says something, you know, nasty about a girl or something you don't accept, every time you speak up and say it's not on. You're voting and you're advocating and you're doing something political in some small way because the personal is political. I think it's so important that people recognize that like all of our small behaviors every day actually amount to something. So I'm like you, I'm never going to go to a gig. That's hard enough in itself. And I don't go to every protest. Like, it's exhausting. And those social settings can be really scary sometimes by yourself. So it's one of those things where I go like 5 times a year at least, but it's not something I'm doing every weekend because I have 10 other things I could be doing. And I think also the trouble with social media is you find that people think if you're not posting about something that you don't care about it, or somehow you're like not the best advocate. And there's this like inherent judgment that's applied. And I'm like, you don't know how someone lives outside of their Instagram account and their Instagram story. And sometimes the person that's posting every day is the person that's never donated, never gone to the protest, never had a conversation with their mum. I think we saw that in the referendum too. There was a lot of people in their silos of Facebook and Instagram being very loud without actually doing anything.
Yeah, I feel like it's one of those ones like I can speak on, you can speak on your behalf, but like I changed a little bit of my opinion on some of these things of like individual. I know you, I definitely agree that individual actions collectively add up to a bigger thing, but I feel like doing some of these pod the pods that we've had and talking to the different people who like the movement and change that's required from people who or from larger corporations or institutions that you can just have the like they can have the collective impact of a million people doing these one little things just in one day. And I feel like that's quite demoralizing as an individual, where it's like, I think the example of like the plastic straw, the paper straws at Macca's, you know what I mean? Like from a customer experience point of view, it pisses me off because I can't get my thick shake up through the straw. And I like,
Extra, and he's a thick boy. Give me extra cream.
I want extra cream. You know what I mean? I'm thinking about it's purely from a selfish point of view, like customer experience. I'm not enjoying my thick shake as much as I used to because someone said that that's the right move that they need to make. But I'm being forced to do this behavioral sort of thing where in the end of the day, like, what the fuck? Why do I have to suffer the consequence from personal, individual? Like, and it's like sometimes it's not really, you know, it's not a thing that genuinely matters. But like that's how we get force-fed on what we think progression looks like sometimes too.
And I think it's hard. Like, I often forget my keep cup and then I feel bad for like 2 hours. And I think about the fact that the environment minister just approved another coal mine. And I'm
Yeah.
like, so how is this? And you know, people are voting who are huge environmentalists, but they're voting for the Labour Party. And it's like, you know, you're the person that carries your, you know, reusable bags and you're the person that is happy with your paper straws. And but you're still voting for a party that continues to enact and allow mining companies and fossil fuel companies to just do whatever they want because of the payments, the donations they make to the parties. So it can feel so demoralizing. I completely agree. I constantly feel it because it feels like no matter what you do as an individual person, you're screaming into the void. And that's the thing. That's why I have to come back to the, like, do one small thing every day. But I get it because I think it's that thing you have to do and tell yourself to remain optimistic and to remain hopeful that change can occur. Because we do see it. We do see a reform that's been pushed forward. And we see, like, at the last election, the amount of like teal independents who are really climate focused getting elected is really proof that the Australian public is pushing towards climate action. But then we have that, you know, one step forward, two steps back with, but Labor's in and they're approving X, Y, and Z. So it's one of those things where it's like you have to remain hopeful and believe that change can occur, but you also have to be prepared to not be burnt out every time you feel that that's regressing as well, which is a hard bargain,
I was
really.
going to say, we chatted about this before we hit record, but just the concept of not being cynical when you live in the world of news and like constantly.
You're uncovering, it feels like you're the filter. You're absorbing all this stuff to help people form. Because it's a confusing space, especially for people like me. I'm like, I don't know the impacts of all these different little things. So for someone like you who's sharing that information and sort of like deciphering it through what you're receiving as
and your
well.
lens. It's like, is it aggressive having to take in so much news headlines and just absorb that amount of content regularly, you know?
It is. It's interesting that you ask that because no one does. One, I think no one thinks that way. People think like that's your job, good. And I think actually there's things that are I see as harder than that. I see the absorption as like I'm someone who is a big news reader and engager anyway. So if I wasn't doing it for a job, like I've made it a job at least. So there's some sort of income there, which is better than just engaging and doing and feeling hopeless anyway, right? I think the harder part is because I'm alone and I just do this by myself and like I was living alone and working alone last year. People think that Cheek is a team of people. So often I get like very abusive messages being like, it's been 2 hours since this headline broke and you haven't talked about it. And I want you to say this, this, and this exactly like this. And if you don't say it like that, you get shat on, right? But if I was to say it like that, I'm a sellout and I would never do that, right? So it's really interesting because one of the harder parts for me is I don't have the capacity to speak to every piece of news. So I feel this burden constantly to be when I have to be selective about what I am and am not leaving behind. But also, I've always prided myself on Cheek not being something that breaks the news. I'm not explaining the headline. What I'm doing is taking a day or two to think about how I feel about something, to learn all of the facts, and then to approach the conversation from there. Because that's kind of the pride point for me is that I'm not immediately reactive at all times. I can sit with something to try and get it right and form my own view. But in a 24-hour news cycle that really is pressurized, that is not valued as much as it should be, I think. So there's like fighting the demand and the screams, but then there's also the pressure for me comes from getting it wrong. I'm so afraid of getting it wrong because, frankly, if I'm consuming news and not getting media from the source every time because I'm looking at different headlines to try and figure out the facts, I'm also going to fail. I'm also going to F up and I'm also not going to have the take every time because social media wants this red hot different take that no one's heard of, which is one, difficult, two, kind of impossible, right? And I'm constantly in fear, and I have this massive imposter syndrome because I'm not a journalist, that I'm just creating something in response, but how much time should I take? And is my take right? Because I am just going out with it to over 100,000 people every day thinking, is this fucked? Am I doing a good job? And you know, the success has bred confidence, but every day there is still something you have to push through to get yourself over the line and get the confidence to put yourself out there like that.
Responsibility. I feel like you'd feel that responsibility of like people really rely on sort of what I've got to say and like, well, it does, fuel you with that energy to keep it going. I feel like listening to people too, like you'd have lots of people in the community. So like you're saying, like you should cover this. And it's like, you don't want to piss off people who are listening to you, but you can't just
You can't tell
do
them to
it.
fuck off, can you?
Yeah. Like
Yeah.
it's a very hard thing because you want people to keep listening and following along in your journey, but it's like, you can't listen to everything. Yeah.
And this is a really good point as well, because I did this panel a couple of weeks ago for like the International Women's Day Festival at the Opera House, and the panel was titled Influencers Are the New Public Intellectuals, right? And I was like, this is an honor to be invited to be an influencer who's a public intellectual. But the fundamental failure of being an influencer is that I shouldn't have to be likable to be trusted with news. Like, I have to make myself palatable and likable to the people that are engaging with me in order to continue making money to be able to do what I'm doing, which is a really hard place to be. Because sometimes I do just want to be like, fuck off. These are my principles. This is my mission statement. And this is how I'm doing it, which I continue to do. But there is an element with being online where people trust you a lot based on likability and if they feel like they could be your mate. And that's a really hard space to navigate because you're saying to people, I want your respect. I want your trust. But I shouldn't have to be palatable in order to be able to engage with you. And that's a hard conversation in an algorithm which benefits from people giving a shit about you, following you, funding you, and getting advertising. Especially when I'm so left wing, advertising and partnerships, also getting paid subscriptions from subscribers who want to pay me because they like me, not because they necessarily just want to engage with my content. It's really hard to morally navigate.
How do you deal with negativity? I feel like this is a like we've had a bunch of people on the pod from like a professional sporting background, and like we talk about like keyboard warriors and people who like feel like because they're following their team or something, they have the right to spew hate and all sorts of different things. And it comes with putting yourself out there in a public forum, but I find that a really interesting thing that you and I have probably we're a lot more reserved. I feel like we like to sit on. It's not we're not openly out there saying we need to do this, we need to do that. I feel like we enjoy being
I got splinters in my ass from sitting on the fence too much.
yeah, But I feel like it's a hard thing because again, like it's like that idea of putting yourself out there and making a living, but also opening yourself up to that negativity, that hate, and then having like if you're doing that solo and living by yourself, and then having to work through that, put a smile back on your face, and pump some work back out. That's a tricky thing that I don't think people historically in previous generations have had to deal with.
And it eats me alive. Like it would be such a lie to say like I don't have like massive, spells of just like I don't know if I can keep doing social media, right? Like that happens often. For it was about a month at the end of last year where I was like really not good, and I was like I don't know if I can come back and do this for another year. Like, but at the end of the day, it's also such a privilege to have 100,000 people that go, "You're one of my favorite accounts on Instagram. You're one of my central sources of news. I love your opinions. I love what you do." Like that's an honor. So it feels also such a cop out to be like, it's tough. It's like, is it really tough? I get to set my own hours. I'm my own boss. Like there's so many privileges, right? But I think the thing I always come back to with like the trolling and like the, death threats, hate comments, all that sort of stuff is like, I think about when I look at the comments on a post, I think about the fact that I've never once commented on a post. Like realistically, I don't comment on the accounts of people I don't know. And I think about my friends, and no one in my friendship circle is someone who would go on Instagram and comment on an influencer or a celebrity or a news outlet's post. And I think about the group of people that do engage in comment sections, and a lot of them are lovely, but they're really less than 1%. Most people silently look at a post and go, huh, like, move on, maybe share, maybe message it to their friend, but I never see it, right? That's the silent majority that I never engage with until I'm maybe at an event that they come to. But I have to realize and touch grass and go, the people that enter comment sections to go like this and like serve up an essay that, about things they don't quite understand are not the majority that I'm walking around getting a coffee next to. They're not everyday people. They're different and they exist on the internet in an entirely different way and in a way that most of the people in my life that I love don't. And not to say that you can't, and there's not very sane, lovely people that go into the comment section, but it's a healthy reminder that if I'm taking something to heart, it's probably not the kind of person who's horrible in the comment section that I would ever know or love. And that helps me get out every day and touch grass and come back to reality and go, at the end of the day, Hannah, there are 105,000 people here who want to hear what you have to say, and you're 25 years old, and that's cooked. So keep going.
Oh, 100%. I mean, building an audience and being that young and feeling that momentum. You mentioned, last year, end of last year, you felt like, was it a burnout where you're just like, this is absolutely like, how do I set boundaries in place where I don't reach this maybe next year and beyond?
Part of it is like I've moved back in with two of my best friends. Like living alone was a great challenge for the year, but like now I having people around just incidental socialization when you're maybe needing to put your phone down for 3 hours is really good. But it's also like the burnout was I'd written a book, I'd toured the book, the referendum, what's happening in Gaza. Like there was like news story after news story upon the fact that I just submitted like a 70,000 word book that I'd written on the side of that, alongside like doing speaking engagements, alongside posting on Instagram and TikTok every single day. It was like there are no thoughts left. It was like this real moment where I was like, you've actually sold your personality to the internet and you've mined your life for content. And what is for you anymore? Because too much of my value was tied to social media. And you don't even have to go into the depths of why that's bad. It's very obvious. So I think it was coming back to myself, taking like a good month where I didn't really post, going overseas with my best friend for a couple of weeks and just going, what is next year going to look like? And how do you protect yourself first and set those boundaries? And I think that just like taking the time and saying, no one's going to die if you just don't post on Instagram for 2 weeks, changed my life, seriously. It's like you're the one that's putting the pressure on yourself, and I have to relieve myself of those barriers before I can actually step in and go, what are the boundaries and what are my own expectations after that?
You ever have a feeling of like when like a comedian, people see a comedian out in public and they want them to be funny? Do you have that same interaction where it's like, give us an opinion, like.
It's funny because what I find is, and I've kind of like realized in the last couple of months that like I'm not an advocate or a media person. The way I like see my position in like Instagram and how people interact with me is they see me as like advocate and friend. Like they want to hear me talk about things, but they think we're mates. So what I find in public is that people come up to me and go, oh my God, so my boyfriend's watching this really problematic porn. How should I start this conversation with him? And they just like get into it with me as if we've known each other for 10 years and I'm at GYG smashing a burrito. Like, oh my God, buy me a Coke Zero first, babe. Like, it's really funny because it's an honor again. And I know that I get on the internet, I'm very personal, which is why people trust me. But it's still a shock in real life because it's actually wild when you realize it's not just your 20 best friends watching and there are 100,000 people that now know about my dating life and et cetera, you know? So what I find in public is that people come up to me and they sit down and they're just like, these are the 10 things that are going on in my dating life. What should I do? And I'm like, oh my God, you have this level of closeness and vulnerability and safety with me, which is lovely, but I actually don't know you and you don't quite realize that, you know? Like, it's really, that's kind of the weird engagement I have.
I was going to say, a question we ask all our guests is a bit of a mental health one. What do you turn to when you're looking to get some energy back in your life?
Honestly, at the moment, it's just getting outside and doing like a 5K walk with two of my friends. Like, it's getting an overpriced beverage. Iced latte is kind of the choice of at the moment, and going for 5Ks in the sunshine, again, touching grass, looking at the trees, and leaving my phone at home. It's literally just having a conversation with someone in my life and asking them how they're going. Because if I hear about someone else, I'm like brought back out of that social media thing and back to reality.
What about like structuring your goals and your dreams and what you want to build? Like, how do you go about like setting a plan for what you want to do? You mentioned after last year with the burnout and that, like setting boundaries. Like, how do you go about structuring what you're building?
I'm not great at structure, if I'm being honest. I'm great at chaos. I think that I always have the like my notes app and my voice memos are messy and I would never let anyone ever, ever, ever see them. But every time I think of something, it's put down and then it's gone into a priorities list. So it'll be like a this year, 5 years, 10 years. That's really how I go. And I have like a list of things that in my life I want to try at least once. But it's not really that I'm like, I don't set follower goals. I don't set any metrics for social media. What I do is set like goals for, I want to go on Q&A. I want to do a TED talk. I would love to run for politics. It's dreams that don't have to happen, but they're things in the sphere that I'm working towards and kind of considering when I make business decisions.
Oh, I like that. Well, hey, it's sort of like we're still really early in 2024, which is it's going quick though. You know, I mean, like I feel like the start of
It
this year is
has
absolutely
flown.
flying. What are you excited about for the rest of the year?
I'm excited because I've got my second book is due in a month. So I'm writing, writing, writing. And I know I just talked about like avoiding burnout. And I'm like, yeah, so I'm doing a second one in the space of a year, which is a lot. My first book came out at the end of September. So it's been a quick turnaround. But I'm really excited for that because I feel like after last year burning out, it was really nice to refresh and go, how am I going to do this in a way that's healthy and safe and produce a better quality work? And so, like, right now, it's just like really enjoying writing and writing the book, the next book that I really wanted to write. Because it's the book I want to read. So writing and then hopefully touring that book. And then I'm really excited for the US election and the federal election. People don't usually say boring things like that, but I'm excited because it's an opportunity for me to engage with people about how campaigns work and to educate them on how these systems work. So I'm excited for the news events that are going to occur, and I'm excited for like my personal goals as well.
What about like writing a book, like the process of writing a book? You mentioned you're keeping up to date with all the socials, doing that business, but like writing a book's different than just a post. It's hours and hours of thinking and structuring. And how do you go about, writing one?
Crunching
I
those
think,
pages.
yeah, it's really bad. I sound so bad. I'm just not the person that's like, yeah, I do 1,000, you know, words a day after a green tea and lemon water. I'm the person that like leaves it to the last minute. I'm like, oh Jesus. But that's because I've spent 2 months thinking about it in my own head, writing my notes and my voice memos, and then I actually get down like pump out like tens of thousands of words in the space of about 2 months. So it's like the thinking and being in my own head, I don't really value, but there is so much of that every day and just writing random thoughts down. And then it's about like collecting and bringing it all together in like a 2 month period where I kind of just go hard on the word count. So it's not the best creative process. I wish I could give something more inspiring. It's not healthy, I would say.
Oh, when's it coming out?
It's coming out the end of this year, so it'll be out in about October.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
I'd be like, I couldn't keep things secret and stuff. I'd be like spilling everything early, I reckon. It's because
It's very hard.
as soon as we do something, I'm like, I just want to release it now because it's happened, you know?
I had a bunch of people who have written books and done stuff on the thing, and like, question we sort of ask, like, do you walk past and see it somewhere and like make sure you get a photo of yourself,
I do.
like there?
I refuse to be humble about it. It's crazy
Yeah.
that I got to do this. Like that opportunity is such an honor. Every time I go to the airport, I go and go, where is it now? I go and find it. I do every
As you
single time.
should,
Yeah.
as you
I'd be
should.
signing
Them. I'd sign them all in secret, and
Yeah,
he's a very special book. You
lick
know,
one, you
it's
know, like
very
here's the gems,
cool.
go. Hey, well, it's so nice to have you on, and I feel like this has been such a cool chat. People are interested in learning more or getting involved or finding stuff. How do they find your stuff?
So on Cheek Media, on Instagram, it's at cheekmedia.co. My book is Bite Back, and then my podcast is Big Small Talk. So those are the three like main ways to find me.
It'll be in the description as well.
You do,
I
you do
do
that.
That. Yeah. You wouldn't know, but I do
very
do that.
good. Very good.
I'm all over it, Hannah. You know, it's all good.
Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hannah Ferguson, I like that name. It sounds famous already, doesn't it?
You reckon?
Hannah Ferguson.
What do you think about Lachlan Bradford?
Sounds very old, traditional, wealthy. Sounds very wealthy, doesn't it? Lachlan Bradford.
I reckon it sounds very plain Jane, you know?
you reckon?
I don't know. I'm just
Robert Lewis Hicks. Okay.
We both don't have like, they're not really like.
I feel like I got a good name.
They're not screaming stardom, you know what I mean?
I think mine is though. You see, you love dragging me down with you, but Robbie Hicks just sounds like a semi-pro surfer or something.
Yeah, semi-pro.
Huh?
I Shaping like that. We're semi-professional podcasters. I like that.
Hey, who's not semi-pro though? Hannah Ferguson.
No, go check our stuff out. If you're new to the pod, we release guest episodes every week. We've got a couple of other ones that come out. Nearly 800 all-time episodes for Funny Business. If you're interested in a bunch of stuff, anything, mainly business, obviously, we've got a bunch of different
people. And
then,
like, any subject you can think of, we're experts in because we've had them on.
You're such a bullshit artist. Enjoy. See you next time.